Right. If we start with a force, that force is Aries. And what it does is it always brings up resistance. And the heaviest kind of resistance is Taurus. And then that sets up a oscillation or a vacillation between the two signs, and that is Gemini. But you can't not make up your mind about something. You can't let things be unresolved. You have to come to a solution. And the sign of the zodiac that represents solutions more than any other sign of the zodiac, especially in the sense of things dissolved in water, is Cancer. If we look at the first house, it represents the opportunities to assert oneself. The second house represents the opportunities for responsibility that accrue to that kind of assertion. The third house represents the kind of knowledge that one needs in a practical sense in order to carry something out. But if you're learning something new, practical knowledge isn't enough. And the materials aren't enough. You have to get the feel of things. And Cancer and the fourth house represent getting the feel of things. Cancer is a sign of very much of feeling. It is when the consciousness is associated with the object of attention. There is a certain degree of personalization that one feels for something else. The fiery signs, especially Aries, represent shoots. Earthy signs represent roots. The stems are represented by the Aries signs, especially Gemini, which rules all kinds of transportation and things like that. But the watery signs, especially Cancer, represent fruit. And something is brought to fruition. And if it's Cancer, it has to be nutritional. Cancer just loves to feed you. No matter where it is, it's the sign of elements. It's the sign of the moon. And the moon is everybody's mother. And so mothers, that is what mothers are for, is to feed. At least that's the way mothers feed anyway. If the first house represents a creative urge, and the second house represents the material acquisitions to carry out that creative urge, and the third house represents the elementary tools, you don't just create from that alone. Things have to incubate. And the fourth house is a house of incubation. For example, Bertrand Russell, is a perfect example of incubation. He said, I read this information on a subject, and I read it and read it, and I don't think about it. But then after a certain number of days, it has incubated in my consciousness, and when I do think about it, everything comes right, and it comes out that way. So the fourth house is incubation, which in humans is gestation. And it's an internal kind of development. When you're dealing with Cancer, you're dealing, no matter where it is in the zodiac, Cancer has a lot to do with internalization. And that internalization isn't always wakingly conscious. There is a good degree of subconsciousness where Cancer in the fourth house are involved. We're saying that each of the eight signs of the zodiac has an attitude about the world. And they aren't all pleasant. You know, Aries is pushy, and Taurus is stubborn, and Gemini is polarized according to its whim. But Cancer is subjective. Everything is subjectified. Unless I feel at home with it, it has no truth. I can't relate to anything unless it's personally mine. that's her grandmother. She knew what it made the kids to leave home. You know, they all had to stay in the room forever. Aries represents spirit. Taurus represents stuff. Gemini represents the thought that takes spirit and molds stuff. But it's just invisible thought. It's Gemini. Cancer is imagination. Thought, imageless thought, has its meaningless in some ways. It has definition, but when you have an image, you have a thought that is a completed whole, and just one glance at it can tell you whether it is correct or not correct. So when you have an unbroken whole, you have integral consciousness, and that is the consciousness that is Cancer. Looking at the symbols for Cancer, one is the polarization of Gemini, only not limited, and you know, Gemini would just as soon go to all extremes, but it's limited. But in Cancer, there are two poles, but they're internal. They're phase. There's day and night, there's positive and negative. So there is about Cancer. It uses both poles of something internally to gestate or perpetuate everything that it does. It is like the womb. Cancer rules the womb, meaning to say it is something that accommodates and adapts according to what is being developed inside of it. And because it's whole and total, it is what Shakespeare in The Moor of Venice, Othello, he says it is the two-backed animal. It means that it is a person in whole. It is a human being before the genders are separated. If you've got two backs, you're completely defended. There's not, you know, this is a defensive sign. This is not a frontal offensive sign. Everything is in. So there is something about this then that in turning inward in a biological fashion is something instinctual. Some of those instincts represent a return to nature. I think I better not go any further with this. But this is the sign that sometimes seeks more than any other sign a biological wholeness in ways that it is not wholesome to talk about in public. It's the 69 sign. The standard symbol is two circles, tails. One points east, one points west. And each is a receptor. And in a way, Cancer in this sense is something like a reservoir. It is something like the subconscious mind, that everything, the fourth house is certainly the subconscious. Everything that happens comes in as an image. With every breath you take, the whole atmosphere is impressed in your body. And when you die, you see your whole life backwards. And it's fascinating because everything you see is more alive than you were aware of in the moment. Every funny little detail, all the feelings you had about it. I had a friend this summer who had a drowning experience. When he went down the third time, he didn't remember it as pictures. He remembered it as all the feelings he had ever had about anything. He saw his whole life backwards in terms of feeling. We're dealing with the backward sign here. We're talking about a sign that, you know, Cancer almost believes it's not a good thing to be too wakingly consciousness. Because if you're wakingly aware, you then have discrete things, and Cancer does not want discrete things. It wants that womb-like hole, and it doesn't want things untangled and delineated, not at all. Well, this is the sperm and the egg in union before there is any internal division. And in our anatomical human being, we have Aries, Taurus, Gemini, and Cancer. The breasts, the directly personal nutritive way where you take something of yourself and give it to someone else. That's really a Cancer kind of thing. Animals. The ancient Egyptians, the animal for, at least on the zodiac Addendera, the one that is now in the British Museum, that's about 30 feet across, the symbol for Cancer was the scarab. And the scarab is a dung beetle. And what would happen is they would never see the eggs, but the scarab would lay its eggs in dung, and then it would, like the way kids make snow people, you know, they make balls like that, it would do that with dung. And the ball would get bigger and bigger, and a little tiny scarab would be pushing around this huge big ball, and that was really symbolic to the Egyptians. And what happened was that was the symbol of fertility, because from the heat of the dung, which was heated up by the sun, the babies were born, and you never saw the eggs at all, and that was ultimate fertility to the Egyptians. They had Ra Kepfer, which was the scarab, which was a beetle that, you know, there was Ra Kepfer and there was Atum Ra. Ra Kepfer was the rising sun, and it was pushed up every day by a beetle. And you didn't see the beetle because the sun was so bright you never saw it. But when it was setting, then it was Atum Ra. And the sign of the rising sun has been in all cultures the sign of fertility, because it brings with it new life. Things are coming up. So it's very much of a fertility symbol. And they saw the beetle as a symbol for the soul, because it sort of creeps through life. And they saw our existence here on Earth being much different from our existence when we're free from the body. Here we creep around like bugs, and you know, bugs are not very swift runners or anything like that. In fact, the whole symbol for leaving the body was indicated by the scarab. Let's see if I can draw it here. This was the scarab, parting of its wings. In this spot, I leave the legs on the side. This spot is like the spot in the skull where the oriental and occipital come together, and when a person spirals out of their body, they spiral out of that. And if you look at the top of the head, if you shave the top of the head, and you see where all the bones come together, it's like the scarab without the legs. It's all tied together. It's beautiful what the Egyptians did. They had a very, very lovely spiritual culture. The scarab family of beetles is every gardener and every agriculturist loves the scarab family, because they are beneficial to all gardens. They cleanse the garden of other pests, and they're very supportive of plant life. In general, beetles are ruled by Cancer. They're hard-shelled, and they have their defense by being hard shells. Cancer is a protective sign. It likes to protect itself, and it likes to protect others. Beetles can fly if necessary. They used to live subaqueously. They used to live under the water. Like, if you're familiar with trilobites, you know what trilobites are? All we have left are their skeletons. And we use them for several things. We use it really for a funny thing. We use them for a thing, and it's opposite. We use them for swimming pool filters, but gardeners use them to sprinkle on leaves because things like slugs and things like that, if they crawl across them, their bellies get scratched, and you don't like that, and that keeps them off of your garden. It's a good night protection for gardening. Beetles all like dense, moist atmosphere. They love to be in cellars and places like that. For most of my adult life, I have lived in a cellar. And very often it was none too tidy of a cellar, and it was not very well developed. In fact, it was primitive, and the whole bathroom was, at one time, was the shower. I just had a pipe up there, and I'd hook up to the faucet, and that would be... And everything that was wood in there had mushrooms coming out of it. I knew what time of the year it was by whether the mushrooms were out or not. And there were, at some kinds of times of the seasons, toward the end of summer, these soft-shelled bugs would come in, and they would be wanting to eat the mushrooms. But after them, as fall came on, the hard-shell beetles would come, and they would live off of the soft-shell beetles. Man, it was like living in an environment. This week, I was treated. Enough to turn off all the women. This week, I was treated to... I was treated to... I have a lot of daddy long legs. If you don't have anything else to do, or if you don't want to do anything else, it's nice to just... lie on the sofa and watch the daddy long legs, and they sense each other from 5 or 6 feet apart. You know, they know the other one is there, and they're stalking each other. And it's amazing how the way they communicate with each other. But this week, I don't know whether it was a mating or not, but one of them got another. And over 3 days' time, it ate the whole, one spider ate the other. You know, like you said, and one was right on top of the other like that. And the one that was underneath the body kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And when it got down to the legs, it was just a flash. You know, a couple hours, it was long gone. And I had all kinds of moral trepidation. You know, I was projecting human values and such on it. You know, it's not the way things are in nature. Nature is, you know, it is kind of a squirmy. It's a squirmy place. It is a, cancer kind of place. You know, bugs are like that. They're ruled by cancer. You know, creepy things are ruled by cancer. You know? And we have it right in our language. It's called "Don't bug me." You know, it's right there. You know, you get the creepy woolies and things like that. Even cancer, the disease, comes from cancer, the sign. Because when you think certain kinds of thoughts, I don't know how to describe it, when you think certain types of thoughts, they are like little, in the etheric world, they're like little bundles of light energy. And they have spicules out of them. And if you think certain kinds of negative thoughts again and again, by association, they come together and they form what psychologists call complexes or constellations. But those complexes and constellations actually take forms that suggest the attitudes or the kind of thinking that produced them. And if they become strong enough, they become the entity that is in the heart of a cancer. Like I had cancer, and I had a very large tumor inside of me, and mine was a guilt embodiment. I didn't forgive myself for something I had done in a past life. And I just nursed it inside of myself. I never got it out of me. Christ forgave me. The cosmos forgave me. But I gave God to myself. And I didn't forgive myself. And that's, you know, that's where cancer originates from. But those original thoughts, like the little, you know, little energy things. In fact, it's a really interesting phenomenon. if someone is lying to you, the little balls of light appear like vacuous, like they're empty. Like you can't hide. If a person is clairvoyant, you can't hide lies. I'm not clairvoyant, but sometimes I get to the edge of it. It's like, but that's neither here nor there. Other animals that are ruled by Cancer. The underwater insect lights, crustacea, crabs, they're round, the moon likes round things, they're ugly, homely. This is the fourth house, is the sign of the home. They're ungainly. And Cancer, like Taurus, is another one of those signs that really likes to eat. You know that crabs have their teeth in their stomach? The stomach is ruled by Cancer. And we say of a person, they get crabbed, meaning to say they get pinched. And since they can't always go backwards, they go sideways. I had a friend that was a Cancer that had Gemini rising. She has those long, gangly legs that Gemini have. And if you saw her from a half a block away, you couldn't tell whether she's coming towards you or going away from you. It was, you know, like what they call a sidling type of motion. She was moving her arms and legs as though she was moving backwards, even though she was going forward. Yeah, it is the sign of backwardness. It's also the sign of lobsters. And lobsters are humongous feelers. And they grope, and they grasp, and they clutch like the crabs. This is a tenacious sign. It isn't stubborn like Taurus, but it hangs on to things for dear life. They're very tender, and in their tenderness, they feel they have to be armed. They have to have something covering them up. Crayfish and crawdaddies, I guess they're called, they are true Cancer things because they swim backwards. Cancer is a retreated sign. It will defend, but it isn't cowardly, but it retreats. It doesn't want the peace to be disturbed. And there's so much like the water the crayfish are that they can't tell their orientation unless they have ballast. And so the crayfish take on sand, and that way they know which way is up. And everybody knows the trick that you play in high school biology. You go to the aquarium, and instead of putting sand in the aquarium, you put iron filings. And then you have your crayfish ballasting with iron filings rather than sand, and then you take a big magnet, you put it around, and the crayfish swim sideways, because that's down to them, that's where the pull is. They're very sensitive to the environment. And everybody knows the crayfish are very, very shy and sensitive. Another family, all of the shellfish, the mollusks, the clams, the oysters, they're really attached to their home. And they're snappingly protective. Now, I happen to love Cancer people very much. I have Mercury in Scorpio, which is sometimes an acid tongue. And it doesn't take much to hurt someone who is Cancerian. And once they've snapped shut, you know, I have friends that for 40 years, I tried, you know, we're really warm and close with each other. And that snapped shut and never opened again. There's a real clannishness where Cancer is involved. If you go around the country and read want ads for people saying, Leo seeks Sagittarius for fun and games, the only time you see one sign asking for another sign is Cancer. Cancer seeks other Cancer to live by the seaside. Receptive. Cancer is an exceedingly, almost uncontrollably receptive sign. When a clamshell is open, it has to be open to whatever comes in it. So there is sometimes a passivity about Cancer. Not the lethargic passivity like you have with Pisces. It's an active passivity that is passive nonetheless. And it is a dissolving digestion. Almost the whole clam is stomach. And in the evolutionary chain, the shellfish are the first animals to have livers. And esotericists find with their clairvoyance by associating their consciousness with something, they can experience the way that thing experiences. And anything that has a liver is capable of feeding. Of course, we know they're very tender. And they like comfort. And, you know, it's like a mother with a family. There has to be no fighting in the family. It'll smooth anything over just so there is no roughness in the family. And the result is a pearl. It keeps smoothing over and smoothing over and smoothing over. Pearl and mother of pearl are very reflective. Cancer is one of those signs that likes to reflect to others what they are, but just likes to reflect in general. And we all know about some of the other shellfish, like the Chambered Nautilus. Oliver Wendell Holmes' famous poem, "Build me more stately mansions, oh my soul, as swift the seasons flow." I forget. He was the most bright man that ever been on the Supreme Court. Attorneys would start presenting their arguments, and he'd write poems, and he'd know their conclusions before they presented the conclusions 20 minutes later. Very bright man. Here's a classical association with Cancer. Owls. Not all raptors, but owls. The nocturnal raptors. They have ultraviolet eyes. And that you can tell that because there's an owl in Oregon that fishes, and it fishes at night. So it can see a fish that's under the water, near the surface of the water, and pick it out. Owls are hooty, shy, cry kinds of things. They make very strange hooting sounds. And I read a story in the newspaper that has nothing to do with Cancer, but these two women meet in the grocery store in England, and they're talking about this and that. They say, "Well, how's your husband doing?" And he says, "Oh, he's happy. He stays home mostly now, and he's developed a wonderful ability. He has learned to talk to the owl in the park, and he can hoot, and the owl hoots back at him." And the other woman says, "Oh my gosh, my husband can too." Isn't that a great idea? These two middle-aged guys hooting at each other across the park. I love it. They're scary animals. They're messy. If you just go to the owl's place in the zoo, and you'll see what mess it's like. And like a lot of the Cancer animals, they swallow their foods whole, and they do it all with powerful digestive fluid. Some nocturnal animals are ruled by Cancer. Raccoons, not those dark. Night-eyed, stealthy, and given the chance, raccoons are obsessive washers. They love to wash their food. In fact, they don't like to eat water. And they're tremendously familial. Another nocturnal animal that is even more familial, the opossum. They take the whole family with them. And again, they take the whole passive stance about danger. They don't fight, they play dead. Then rodents are ruled by cancer. Rabbits. Talk about fertility. Some even believe that the super people, that they have different fields to different states of development. I don't know if that's true or not. They're emotionally rounded. Now, I can't do it. I can't get used to that way. But have you ever seen people with either cancer rising or the sun in cancer? They go like this. You know what I mean? They get that real strange movement at the tip of their nose. And they start doing it, and they forget about being in polite society or things like that. It's like habits. I like that, I think it's, when they're cancer or something like that, they do it. They're heavy feeders. And again, they're defensive. And then there are the gigantic rabbits that are ruled by cancer kangaroos. Now, mystics find that the top half of the body is ruled by the sun. And it has to do with the activity that you perform on your way back to rebirth. And as a consequence, since most of the activity is spent on new creative activity, people in whom the upper part of the body is really big are extroverted usually. But the bottom half of the body is lunar. And that is what people do right after death, but before they start coming back. And that's where they rehash their whole past life. They go through a purgatorial existence, and various kinds of heaven existence. And so there is that kind of digestive quality where you're digesting your past experience. Now, if you look at a kangaroo is about as lunar of an animal as you're going to find. The upper part of the body is real tiny, but everything from the waist down is huge. Next time we get to the animals that have the upper part, it's extroverted lions and things like that. They're very highly protective, and defensive, and marsupial. And then one last animal, and it's such a difference between the day version and the night version. This time we get the night version, and next time the day version. Moths are ruled by cancer. They're silky, they have that sheen, they're nocturnal, and they're passively defensive. I can remember in Kimball Creek, State Forest, I was walking down a path, and I looked down, and I almost stepped on it, and I saw these eyes looking up at me. And it was a moth that looked just like the brown leaves that were on the ground, except that it was a moth. And it's got the eyes in to frighten anything that tries to dive at it. It's again that cancerian kind of quality. Fluid digestion. We all know what moths will do to the things that you leave in your drawers. And they represent, together with Leo, the metamorphosis of the soul. Not just the creeping along, but the metamorphosis. And even though they're nocturnal, they're fatally attracted to the light. Seasonally, when the sun is in Cancer, it's the time of luxuriant growth. There's no restraint to growth. Everything just goes rapidly. And it's the most lush time of the year. It's the time when there's shade and protection. In some places, it's when the monsoons come. And it's the beginning of the fruitful season. I've had greens in my garden this year. I drink a lot of green juice, and it's great to have raw fresh greens. There's a sense of completing things, growth and vegetation and all of those things. There's no thought of the cold of winter. And at the beginning of Cancer, at the summer solstice, is the festival of the fairies. Fairies that live in the etheric realm and bring things into physical completeness. In the Bible, Jacob prophesies for his child Benjamin. Benjamin shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall down the prey, and at night divide the spirit. Certainly Cancerian qualities. And to some extent, I'm not doing this, it's very hard to get into about that for hours and hours and hours for the whole thing, but in the Bible, the Benjamites were the homosexuals, which Sigmund Freud would love. It goes along with his whole idea of too strong of a mother instinct producing homosexuality. That was his main take on homosexuality. Mythologically, Hestia, or Vesta, who was the goddess of the home. Quiet, she was the one goddess that never spoke up at any time. She maintained everything, and she maintained the sacred fire that was the home for the gods. So it's the goddess of hearth, and it's like Cancer. She had to have the fire going because she was always cold. That happens where Cancer is really strong in the chakra, always, always cold. She was the goddess of cleanliness and of purity, especially reproductive purity. We've all heard of vestal virgins and things like that. And Vestia or Hesta would rather be in the background, and that's certainly Cancer. Let those garish Aries or those shameless Leos be up front. I want to be in the background. In Greek mythology, Nox, Mother Night. The Greeks knew about space, and they knew about its womb. According to Hesiod, night or darkness was the source of all things. Everything was created in the dark. There is, it's sort of, the Cancer notion is too much light spoils the created atmosphere. It wants things more subtle. So light, you know, if you're working with clairvoyance, Nox was self-contained. Even all the brilliancy of all the stars were just little bits compared to that room of darkness. Nox was the mother of dreams and of demons, as things that are undigested in the subconscious of the fourth house. The fourth house is the source of night dreams, and things that need to bring themselves to the surface come to you in pictures and symbolic ways in dreams. So it all ties together very, very nicely. Mythologically, Cancer rules the Lemures, and Lemures are household spirits. They are little household fairies, and sometimes they even have little brooms and things like that. This place they would have to be talking fairies because there aren't many brooms for them to imitate. It doesn't get swept very often. They're like divinities or guardians of the family. Sometimes they are clan spirits. So anytime Cancer and Capricorn, that whole axis has to deal with ancestry and family ties and matrilinear consciousness and all things like that. Also mythologically, the whole concept of a divine mother. We're going to talk about another kind of mother eventually. But the ultimate source of everything, a mysterious source that's always hidden behind gowns and robes and things like that. It is the mother that is intimate to into everything. When you're talking about cancer, you're talking about the sign of intimacy. There is a need to be intimate with each and every person. Some people even feel that food is just a way for them to become intimate with other people. It is the space as the home of the Divine Mother, the home of the gods. So the Absolute, which is everything that is and everything that isn't, and you can't even speak about the Absolute, it's unspeakable. And that is often characterized as the dark feminine. In a lot of societies, Chard can tell you that there is a lot of worship of the Divine Mother, because there's a realization that there is a spiritual as well as a material element that comes from that. It's a Divine Mother that's perpetually pregnant, perpetually gestating things. That would be ideal for a cancer, to be perpetually pregnant. So it's like a receptivity and it's a holding. It's like memory. For memory to work, it has to be a receptivity, but not a receptivity that just lets things come in, but something that can hold on to it. So the memory, the spirit memory is very impressionable. And at the same time, once it takes an impression, the impression lasts forever and it holds on like that. And that's a very Cancerian. Yeah, we're talking about all kinds of ideas, and these ideas are not necessarily objective things. But what we're trying to get at with doing this, that we're doing, working the signs of the zodiac, is we're trying to get at those ideas. Because that is what people create with in their psychology. It is those ideas out of which every little idiosyncrasy of personality is born and everything that comes into the world. Cosmologically, Cancer represents space. It represents potential. A potential that anything can be born in. So it is a perpetual conception. Astronomers now believe that the entire cosmos is swelling in an ongoing pregnancy that has no end. And it is an eternal becoming. Aries would like to say that it is the impregnation, the Big Bang. But it is Cancer that does the building work. Space is undefined. And that's what a really good mother is. A mother nurtures and it fosters anything and everything, but it doesn't try to define too much for what the child is going to be. A mother should be almost in awe at the power that she has in forming not only the psychology of a child, but even the physical body. I was laid on my back too much, so I got a flat spot on the back of my head. you know what I'm trying to say, that there's something very, very fostering. Now, whether the Cancer as space is drawing, you can't say that the explosion is causing the space to expand. From the Cancerian point of view, its expansion is drawing out the explosive force. Everything for Cancer is drawing. Whether it's a drawing of a picture, or whether it's an herb like, Cancer herb that draws poisons out, or the poison ivy or something like that. Go to the chickweed, you get it right away. But sometimes it is the drawing quality of a question. You don't just tell a child something, you draw it out by asking questions. But in any case, it is always subtle, and it's always internal. matter, from the viewpoint of the ancient spiritual seekers, matter is just condensed space, hollowed out of space. So it's like a gigantic womb. Darkness represents not conscious waking activity. It's easy to precipitate something in darkness. If you're being intimate with someone, it's much better to be intimate in the dark, because all of your feelings, all of your sensitivities are much enhanced. It's what's visible to the eyes, all too obvious. You know, people who are into eye candy, my goodness, they're kind of shallow. Darkness doesn't resist light. It just lets it come in and come in and come in, and it overwhelms it by its ability to not resist. So like light is the mate of darkness. Mediumship is a cosmological Cancerian notion. Mediumship to receive and conceive and convey energy with as little bit of interference as possible. So we see an emotional passivity that can carry a mood from one person to another in a mediumistic way without having to add stuff of its own. It's sort of a negative kind of quality, but it's a flowing quality. And it's sort of like an instinctual quality, because if you start putting your self-consciousness into a process where you are being the medium, you change the material that you are bearing. And so again, you don't want too much self-consciousness. It's very hard for Cancerian people to be blatantly egoistic, because they just don't see things that way. You know, you don't see a lot of mothers that are outright blatantly egoistic about being mothers. And it represents states that are more inner world than out. Things like trance or shock or all of those things where you're partially in the etheric world and partially in the physical. Those are all Cancerian kinds of qualities. You can be in shock and not be awake to the external world and then come out of shock and tell everybody what went on, because, you know, again, there's no interference. Some philosophical or spiritual ideas. Imagination. It's a force that is controllable. It's a volitional passivity and receptivity. And it's like semi-autonomous. I'm a person that is extremely left-brained, and some people would say hair-brained, but that's another matter. But in order to get into right, when I have the time, in order to get into right brain consciousness, I try to teach myself how to draw. And it's miraculous. It doesn't, you know, it isn't like automatic writing or something like that. But when you get the gestalt of something, when you get the big picture of something, you know, like you eat it up with you, and you don't even have to watch the movement of your hand. You know what I'm trying to say? It's a wonderfully completing kind of activity. To the Cancer especially, but to any mystic, imagination is completed thought. If you just have the definition, or if you just have an invisible meaning, that doesn't mean anything. It's when something is complete, when it has a form, when there is a union between light and form, and there's that kind of completion that is in the yin-yang symbol. It doesn't like imageless thought. And it's amazing, if you can form any kind of picture in your consciousness, a Cancer person will get it. Even if your picture is incorrect, they'll get the picture. picture is worth 1,000 words, and we'll let Jim and I have 1,000 words. This is something that's whole. Something, there's something intrinsic, something implicit in imagination. It has to all be there. You can't have it can't be open-ended. Dreaming is a cancer phenomenon. Not fantasy, but conscious, but not conscious imagination, but night dreaming. It's something that's subtle. It's an interface. It's, again, like a womb. It's the symbols in dreams are like a gate between two worlds. That gate hides things as much as it opens things, but it's a world that is a world of symbols and meanings without the material world limitations are what come through in dreaming. It's, you know, again, the whole idea of a complete whole. Like when a baby is born, it's born whole. And that mother, from the very beginning, when it's just a little tiny embryo, it's a complete whole. And that's the way things are. And so, like, if there is a, you know, the consciousness of dreams is you get the whole of the idea and not what, you know, not all the trivia that happen around it in this world. Cancer is the sign of nurture. It's a cardinal sign, and it likes to participate in the ongoing thing of it all. And it does that by nurture. Nurture is more than protection. Cancer is certainly protective. It's actually feeding. It's giving something. If you think of breastfeeding, literally, all the breast does, the mammary gland, all it does is it changes blood to milk. Whatever's in the blood will be in the milk, and it's just, you know, it's just a series of little tubules where blood gets turned into something that you can eat. And boy, that's a real great idea for cancer, that it can be giving its own life's blood to a child. That's, you know, as one astrologer from Michigan says, yeah, but it also leads to tit and tummy fetishes. That's a crazy, crazy thing. Comfort. In order to accomplish the things that cancer does, there has to be a repose. And that repose is a passive receptivity. And it's like the pearl. The pearl is created for comfort. But the comfort can be personal, but it doesn't have to be personal. I think the ideal of a cancer is to be like a stuffed chair that's been used and used and used. It's comfortable. And everybody, and, you know, the cancer would like to be like that. It's been socked around and it's been sat on and everything else. And it, you know, it's useful and it provides comfort. Cancer and the fourth house represent the bottom of things, the very nadir of things. So it represents things that are at a subtle base. And it's a kind of consciousness that will plunge beneath the waters of emotion until it can actually get to the bottom of things. And it's willing to even retreat in subjugation in order to get to the bottom. And if there is an identification with feeling and allowing others to emote, it is a retreat into self in a way that is not actively self-destructive, but passively self-destructive. Cancer is the sign of masochism. It's a sign that, you know, it feels like it's offering something in allowing itself to be beat. It's a sign that represents sympathy. It wants to be attuned. It wants to be in rapport. That's the real intimacy. It isn't only just touchy-feely intimacy. It is like being in a psychic rapport with someone. that everybody, you know, that one feels what the other is feeling. So empathy, and those words, that one word that I believe is more misused than any other in the English language, maybe not most, but the condolence. People are always offering their condolences. There's one condolence. There's only one sympathy, you know what I mean? I'm offering you my condolences as if there were donuts or something like that. There's I'll rant and rave tonight. All right, nature forces, liquidity. Liquids always seek their own level. There's something very subjective and clannish about this sign. Water. On one hand, it is fresh, moving water. We haven't come to the stagnant water. That comes later on. So like rain and runoff and streams, things like that are very Cancerian. Water as the medium of life. There is not a thing that lives on the world that can live without water. And that whole idea of bringing life to a form is the ultimate of a Cancerian idea. Water as the sea. Because this is a cardinal sign. The sea is always in motion. There are waves. There are tidal currents. Again, it's got that sensitivity that it's, you know, it reflects every little motion that comes on it. I love to see waves with waves on the waves, and then sometimes on the tertiary level there are waves on waves on waves. Wonderful thing. So there's something frictionless. There is something restless about Cancer. The sea is also briny. We're talking about a sign here that can be pretty salty, like sailors, pickling, preserving. All solutions like that. Water as cleanser. As lavador, as smoother. Let any rock stand out there, no matter how hard it is, and the action of water will eventually smooth it over. And that let water, you know, that even things like epoxy can be washed away by water. There is no glue that, you know, it's the as the water of life, it was called the mensurum natural. And what was the water that was the ultimate? It was aqua vitae, the water that was the water of life. And what was the water that was the solvent of all? I forget that. I'm a little bit dull on alchemy. Water is the natural reflector. If you see a still pond, It reflects a picture perfectly. It also magnifies things. And it's like the emotions. It's excitable. And once there is excitability, the images become chopped up. The desires become chopped up and really small. So it's a really excitable sign. Water as retentive. It'll hold everything in it, and it'll do so very subtly. Cancer is everything that is incubatory. Any kind of pondering or musing or anything like that. I was at the acupuncturist today, and he put blankets on me. And it was just when I was feeling chilly, too. It was that kind of a thing, where you're surrounded and you're covered and all of those things. All the processes that are osmotic or cohesive forces, absorption, things like that, surface tension, Those are all Cancerian principles. You can see how, just to give you an idea of how universal these ideas are, if you think of one way, if you think of a clam closing up, but then think of water being isolated and it surrounding itself like with surface tension to produce a little droplet. It's a kind of thing that when you once get the idea in your consciousness, you can see that there are infinite ways that it can be expressed. And that's what we're trying to do with these talks, is get the basic fundamental astrological ideas, and then from them we can do all kinds of things astrologically. In anatomy and physiology, the stomach is ruled by Cancer. It takes very powerful fluids and it breaks things down and reduces them. It transforms them. It's basically acid in nature. But it is sensitive to emotional excitement. You feel it in the pit of your stomach. And, I don't know how to say it, you bounce a baby, well, you're bouncing the food in your stomach. It's the same kind of thing. Things are stirred by basically what is a bouncing motion in your stomach. The womb, or the matrix, where the semi-conscious building activity takes place. It's an internal building. Very fluidic. It's basically a sac. People who misunderstood these ideas thought that people who had lunar excitability and were hysterical, that was because the moon ruled the womb, and therefore they would do a hysterectomy. Choice it needs to make about that, but I'll be nice and not make it. The mammary glands, which is that metamorphosis of blood to milk. Would you like to hear a tit story? Doesn't have too much to do with cancer. But for a good number of years after my divorce, I associated mostly with lesbians. I felt safe and protected from myself. And the stories that some of these women would tell were really something. And one came and reported what another one had done. This was back in the 80s, and they were going to liberate B.B. Clark Beach. And this lesbian woman lays out there completely topless. And the police officer comes up, and he tries to be nice about it, but he wants to have his way. And he says to her, ma'am, would you please cover your genitals? And he said, they're not genitals, they're secondary sex characteristics, like your beard. When you cover your head up, I'll cover my breasts. Oh, boy. All right. The solar plexus. Each of the plexes is ruled by a different planet. The solar plexus, even though it says solar, is lunar, actually. It is where the etheric energy that comes from the sun is transformed and made usable in the individual etheric body. And it's associated with instinctual understandings. And if a psychic tries to give you a reading from your solar plexus, please turn them down and say, no, I don't want you going into your instinctual consciousness. I would much rather it came from your waking intelligent consciousness that's associated with the divine. It's associated with mediumistic phenomena, such as when there are trance mediums and there are materializations. They draw out the energy through the solar plexus. If you read those Carlos Castaneda stories, there's some pretty wild stories about energies coming out there. Potential positive motivation, some of these we've said already, intimacy for its own sake. It wants everything to go back to a state of oneness again. Support. It wants to help things grow. It's parental and avuncular support. Feeding. One of the Cancer keyword sets is, this is good for you. Every society has that liquid food, you know. My mom makes the best soup in the world kind of thing. Absorption. A willingness to take all of the blows of the world and all of the suffering for the sake of others. Silence. This is on that axis. Capricorn and Cancer both like silence. Cancer, for a different reason, it likes to keep things in the whole state. Remembrance, especially nostalgic remembrance. Homesickness, very Cancerian. Some potential negatives, personalization of things, taking everything very personal, very subjective, very partisan, with all kinds of maudlin feelings. Maudlin's a good Cancer keyword. Negative receptivity, retreatism, we've talked about that, higher retentiveness, self-negation. Somebody says, I'm not worthy of that. You're hearing Cancer somewhere there. Bipolarity, it's a negative sign. It's probably the most negative, not in saying no, but the most negative in taking in everything and being receptive. By attribute, it's a cardinal sign. It's active in its place. Things like spinning, in terms of spinning and weaving, are Cancerian things. The life of a mother is a circular life. I spent a year living with a woman. We were going to get married, and I was recovering from a serious illness, and I was living in her house, and I was just astounded because I'm extremely masculine. I've got to get things done, and I got to get things done out there. But in the family circle, the kids had to be wakened every day, and they had to be fed, and they had to be dressed, and they had to go to school, and there were all of these circular things that kept going over and over again, and it seems like nothing is getting done, but really everything is getting done, because all of, you know, because it's a womb out, the home is a womb outside of the womb. Because in that intimacy and in the repetitive circular activities is the way one develops. And it's quite a thing. So it's an active transformation, but not necessarily with regard to something external. It's a, in terms of the elements, it's a watery sign, and we've talked quite a bit about that. It's excitable, it's fluidic, and it's whimsical. The ruler is the moon. The defender of all, the mother of all. Two planets have their exaltation there. Neptune has its exaltation there. And Neptune is spectral spiritual consciousness that has everything in it. And Neptune has its exaltation in Cancer because it's like if you have one drop of the ocean, you have the whole ocean, meaning to say that when something is in solution, it covers the whole ocean, and that's a very Neptunian idea. Jupiter also has its exaltation there. And Jupiter is the preserver, and it is the alchemist, and it can be many different things to many people, and in preserving that wholeness or its bigness is where its exaltation comes out. Saturn has its detriment there, and Saturn likes things coldly objective, and it likes structure, and it doesn't want things in a fluidic womb. Mars has its fall there, and Mars having its fall, it can't get anything done in Cancer. It's like treading water or like boiling water. The water goes out and it goes right back in again. People who have the sun in Cancer, Here's a man that one of his contemporaries said it was like a man that you had all of his skin peeled off of him and was let in the world. Jean-Jacques Rousseau, the famous French philosopher who had a mama thing because his stepmother is the one who taught him sex several times. He had a mama thing all of his life. One of my favorite composers, Gluck. Here's somebody that was very clannish. He was head of the Fabian Socialist, Sidney Webb. Here's somebody that really was feeling full. You could give her the petals of a red rose and the petals of a white rose, and she could tell you which was which. Helen Keller. Here's one that is very shy, that doesn't like to be brought outside of it, the womb of itself. Shy Cal, if you know Calvin Coolidge, who said as little as he possibly could. One reporter came up to him and said, I have a bet with another reporter that I can get you to say more than three words. And Cooley said to him, you lose. Yeah. Here's one that gets really clear pictures. The pictures that you see when your past comes back to you are super clear. Here's one that has a technique of using light to give super clear pictures. Andrew Wyeth. Here's one that is extremely nostalgic, Stephen Collins Foster. Here's one that was sort of a bumbler kind of a guy. and as soon as in his inaugural speech, he was using kitchen terms, Jerry Ford. Here's one that's extremely, extremely protective and even took a protective role for the world, Della Reese. Here's one that was emotionally evocative, Nathaniel Hawthorne. And here's one that was very safe, and I think he had his job because he was safe, David Brinkley. Here he is, one that was exceedingly self-deprecatory, Milton Berle. Here's one that was nostalgic, and his nostalgia got to him, and he became one of those cancer alcoholics. Richard Rogers. Here's one that believed in mystical transformation, fake or real, Blackstone the magician. Here's one that was probably one of the most symbolic movie makers ever, Ingmar Bergman. Kubler-Ross was sort of a ghoulish mother type. She had a clairvoyant experience and saw the Divine Mother. She saw the heaven as a huge, big vagina. I heard the talk in which she said that. Wow, what's going on here? Here's somebody who was very defensive, and he turned out to be a restaurateur, Jack Dempsey. Here's one that liked nature and that liked water and all of those living things, Henry David Thoreau. Here was another alcoholic drunkard that liked food a lot, Phil Harris. Here are the, for a whole half a century, the mothers of everybody in the world, Ann Landers and Abigail Van Buren. They were both that. Here's one that had probably one of the most remarkable memories in history, Marcel Proust. Remembrance of things past. Here's one that to this day, and I find some of his nostalgia funny, Bill Cosby. And of course, we have to have our mother, Martha Washington, as a cancer. One who saw the whole universe as bubbles, water bubbles, and did things in integrals, Leibniz. Here's one that liked well-fed models, rounded and voluptuous, Rubens, Jean Paul Rubens. Here's one that was psychic and moody and had a mother thing too, Gustav Mahler. And here's one that always felt insecure that she wasn't maternal enough. And you listen to one of her monologues and she was always downing herself as a mother, Phyllis Diller. Herring, William Mayo. The whole Rockefeller dynasty basically is a cancer dynasty. Here's another one that was sort of masochistic. I'm no good kind of a person. Red Skelton. Here's one that had liked the moon faces and the subjectivity. Modigliani. A psychic healer, Mary Baker Eddy. Sentimental, Nelson Eddy. A very Baroque kind of imagination, really into masochism and things like that. Franz Kafka. Pearl Buck for Mother China. And here's one that had the best pictorial sense and maybe one of the best horoscopes I've ever seen in my life as far as pictures. I was in a crowd one time for a show down at the Art Institute in Chicago. I'll never forget the day. It was, 35 years ago. And it was one of those exhibits where they were pushing you through really fast. And I came around the corner and I saw a painting of his called The Rape of Lucretia. And right there, one glance, and I couldn't stop myself from crying. It was so well executed in depth. Rembrandt is Cancer. Here's one that believed in personal damnation, that you damned yourself forever and ever. John Calvin was a Cancer. And here's one that was extremely romantic in her imagination, George Sand. Probably the ultimate Cancer imagination. This man used to imagine all the components of an electrical motor. He would imagine the kind of alloy you would use for the wire, how many turns you would turn, and what the fields would be like, what the brushes would be. And he'd make 6 or 7 of these motors. And then he set them running in the back of his mind. And several months later, he'd come back and he'd take them apart and see which one was most efficient, which one wore the most thing. And when they did his experiments in the laboratories, he was always right. Nikola Tesla. It was a Cancer, the ultimate Cancer. In abstract rulership, domestics are ruled by Cancers. Sailors, gardens, reservoirs, launderers, preservers, bodies of water, large and small, ulcers, cooks in restaurants, biologists and naturalists, all of the Cucurbitaceae and all of the Solanaceae are ruled by Cancer. Housekeepers, the serum of the blood, dairies, maternal figures, even some inns. With Cancer rising, dairies, D-A-I-R-Y. Oh, I had a Cancer girlfriend once. She was creamy. It's the only way you could describe her. Yeah, she was smooth and silky and all of those kinds of qualities. I'm talking about psychological. I'm not the oh, come on. Cancer rising is often very weak, and they have monstrous large hands like claws. My father had Cancer rising and huge, big hands. Often they're psychic. My father saw my little sister when she died and lots of other things. They're very shy. They carry a lot of water weight, not fat weight, but water weight. Sometimes they have that backwards walk. They're often moon-faced, either being round moon-faced or very thin like a moon. They're secretive. They have very soft features. Cancers, for some reason, when rising, like to sigh a lot. They don't have triangular bodies, they have more slug-like bodies. They cry easily, but not as easy as Pisces rising. They often have thin arms. They're very sensitive, and they're homebody types. Let's look just a very few. What are we doing for time? We got about 6 or 7 minutes, right? All right. The fourth house. The fourth house represents opportunities to access or utilize the personal subconscious. That is, if you want to get at what's the dross that you have from your past through dreams, that's it. Personal remembrances are indicated by the fourth house. Anything that is going to be taken and studied primarily symbolically is what the fourth house. Personal retreats, like when you just go lock yourself in your room. And the fourth house, as we said very early on, represents incubation. Everybody has their own, the subconscious is something like a black box. You know, those people that place suggestions like, I'm going to do 3 more push-ups tomorrow. They make that suggestion and tomorrow comes along and they do 3 more. And they think it's a miracle. It's just that this is the function of the subconscious. And I had a friend that felt that way. He said, why study anything else? This is it. And I said, well, suggest to yourself tomorrow that you're going to understand the principle of specific and general relativity. And that stopped them in his tracks right then and there. That requires, you can't do everything through the subconscious. There are some qualities that in the black box work well. So, subjective stylization, where you try to externalize in a stylistic way what's going on in your soul. The personal environment. Now, the ascendant is your relationship to the general environment, to the external world. The fourth house represents the personal environment, where you feel at home and in yourself. Like your whole home itself, or usually your bedroom. The personal environment, if you try to make it personal to you, it's something like an estate. Like where you grow hedges and things like that. The personal environment is the substance that you have built with, meaning to say heredity. Those 2 billion possibilities that you got from your parents. It represents developmental periods. How in your personal experience how long does it take you to get used to something, to acclimatize yourself, to feel at home with it? Moves, when you have to move your personal environment, that's often a fourth house thing. In short, locale. If you're a neighborhood person, the fourth house is very important. The fourth house represents opportunities to solve personal problems, not problems with other people or social problems for society at large, but personal problems. That is, if you have traumatic experiences that have slanted or bent your consciousness one way or another. The way you get at traumatic experiences is through the fourth house. Habits, whether you want to get rid of habits or change habits or make new habits, those are fourth house activities. All of those personal improvements, especially if you take a personal inventory where you write everything down on some part of your life. Opportunities to succeed through being in a lower position or an indirect position, like the fourth house indicates relations or opportunities to have relations with the father. The father is the indirect parent. The mother makes the decisions about what you eat and what you're going to wear and things like that. But the father decides what we're going to do about red China and whether there you that sort of thing. The latter part of life, when you are no longer at the forefront and you retire into being some kind of a has-been, that the kind of spirituality that takes place in the latter part of life. It also indicates opportunities to deal with low places, like cellars and mines and wells and things like that. Some miscellaneous opportunities, retirement opportunities, opportunities where you can put yourself in a completely subjective point of view. In mundane astrology or horary astrology, the fourth house represents local conditions, restaurants, basements, cellars, cisterns, weather and climate are indicated by the fourth house, laundries, denouements, that is, if you ask a question and after the events are over and everything unwinds, it's like when the detective says who done it, that is a fourth house thing. She knows all about denouements. She can stand up here and give us a 45-minute lecture on it. Bodies of fresh or moving water, mines, nursing homes or retirement centers, ships and shipping, harbors, naturalists and people working with natural resources. If it's in a national chart, dietary trends, things like that. And that's it. We got that one in just about exactly at 90 minutes.